Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The legislature decided it wanted to spend almost $1 billion on vouchers. Well, that's a want to, but there are other things that they have to do under the Constitution, and adequately funding our public schools is in the have-to category.
So I don't know if she did, but I do know that criminal activity and speaking about criminal activity or warning others about criminal activity or threatening witnesses after a crime has occurred is not protected speech.
I have very, very simple priorities. They're building trust in our community, making sure officers have the support that they need, and delivering a high level of service and protection to the residents of the city of Phoenix.
If Fondamonte acting within the law can be held as a public nuisance by the state of Arizona through the usurping of the legislature, then so can every other farmer in Arizona.
We moved away from being known, respected, and trusted as taking care of working class people and became this like nebulous idea that nobody understands who we are.
And with me to talk about a judge's finding about the constitutionality of the way the state pays for schools' capital needs, an Arizona senator checking out the Iowa State Fair, and more, are Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker Aaron Lieberman. Aaron, good morning to you.
Great to be back.
So, Aaron, I want to start with you. A lot of education advocates are calling the judge's ruling in this case over schools' facilities and capital needs a pretty significant deal. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I sure hope so. I mean, we have this kind of pesky thing called the Arizona Constitution, which says that we've got to do a great job, a uniform job funding our public schools. I want to point out this is a Doug Ducey-appointed judge. This isn't some liberal judge that people are going to attack and all of that stuff. And he's pointing out what everybody knows, which is we have underinvested in our public schools. We need to do a lot more. I like the quote in the newscap that we just heard. That's not an optional thing or some new policy idea. That's what's written into our state constitution. And the legislature needs to get their act together and make a serious investment in our public schools.
Marcus, understanding that this will be appealed, I mean, the House Speaker and Senate President have already said that they're going to appeal. How significant do you think this decision is?
Oh, it's massively significant. You are talking about a price tag probably in the billions of dollars, not millions of dollars. And, you know, I think everybody, if you are anywhere near the education space, you probably saw this coming a mile away. You had 60 witnesses, I think, and I cannot tell you how many, examples that they brought forward. The state has already lost this case once before, and then we reformed the entire system to something called the SFB,
School Facilities Board,
through a grant process. And then the state didn't really fund the grant.
And underfunded it.
And so, big shocker, they got sued and lost. It will not, we're going to kick the can down the road because you're going to appeal. I, with 98% certainty, think that the appeal will be lost by the state. But that price tag comes due in just say 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. It's going to be super expensive, and we don't have the ability in the state to raise revenue very well.
If we're talking about billions of dollars, Aaron,
I've got an idea. Let's stop paying for millionaires to send their kids to private school with a runaway voucher program. And that's really what's happening. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. They call it universal vouchers. It's paying for rich people to not have the state pay for their private school. Incredibly, if you look at how low our tax rate is, anyone taking that voucher, if you make under 300 grand, you're taking more from the state than you're paying. Everybody seems to be opposed to welfare until they get a chance to get theirs. And that's what's happening with our voucher program. We really need to stop it and put that money into our public schools.
But Aaron, understanding that that's generally a non-starter for the Republicans who control the legislature and the possibility that there's a Republican governor in office in a couple of years, what are some of the options for, if we're talking about billions of dollars, what are some of the options for getting that?
Honestly, I think even among some of the more mainstream or centrist Republicans, the idea of paying for millionaires, I mean, some income limit on upper limit, which is what the governor proposed this last time on the voucher program, would honestly really make sense. They've got to go somewhere. They could go back and redo Proposition 1, 2, 3, which they let lapse and haven't done that.
Probably do that next year.
Yeah, exactly. To get more out of the state fund. There's lots of choices, but it's just like they say, you know, if stop digging the hole first. And that's really, if you go back and look at the predictions of the voucher program, $40 million, I think, was the original one. Maybe we're now up to $1 billion. It's a runaway train. It's like that fuels program that just got totally out of control. The Republican legislature that authorized that fuels program came back and eliminated it. We got to do something similar.
Marcus, do you see a universe in which Republicans in the legislature do something to change the universal ESA program?
No. They will look at every other option under the sun, but probably not that one. And I would just point out, I mean, look, this is one problem that we've talked about, but, you know, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee came out, is actually consistently updating a report on the effects of the Big Beautiful Bill. And so, you know, that has already had an impact on Arizona. It's like 350 million this year in this budget that we just passed. And then by the third year, you grow to 450 million. So we're going to, I mean, it's not only the school revenue that we're going to have to make up. We're going to have to make up some revenue in some other places, too. So there's some tough choices coming. I would not, personally, I would not want to be a legislator in the next 3 years.
I mean, given, as you referenced, the difficulty in raising taxes and raising revenue, it seems like the two options really are to make cuts or to ask voters to raise revenue in some way.
That's exactly what I would say. One of the very few choices I think you have is going to the ballot on some of this stuff. And I think that's maybe – and the question is whether the legislature refers something to the ballot or is it the people?
Do you see the ballot as maybe the option here?
We passed a surtax on high income earners. It's kind of a funny thing when the legislature passed the flat tax, they assumed that surcharge on high income earners was going to be in place, and we'd have essentially a graduated income tax. Then, crazily, a judge threw out, even though a majority of Arizonans voted for it. So maybe we'll be back to something like that. I would hope. I mean, I think, you know, it's public service. Our legislators, we've got Democratic minorities that are close that would all vote for it. You probably need three or four Republicans. We've seen this in things like Medicaid expansion and other things like that, where a small group of Republicans join Democrats, essentially take control of the chamber. I was there for one or two of these. It's kind of exciting when you're in the minority to see it all go down. And when you have a majority of the votes, it's 31 and 16. Even if that's just two or three Republicans, you can get something to a Democratic governor. I will say, I think Governor Hobbs, you know, the state is booming. I think her reelection chances are actually quite high right now. And that's going to be a big difference maker, certainly, in terms of how we solve this.
Marcus, have you ever been to Iowa?
No. As a matter of fact, I haven't. And I do want to go because I have a number of very close friends of mine that grew up in Iowa.
Well, I'm sure they'd love to see you. Maybe they would take you to the Iowa State Fair.
I would love to go to the Iowa State Fair, if nothing else, just to eat.
Yeah, a lot of deep fried goodness there. Mm-hmm. And if you were there a few days ago, you would have seen one of Arizona's U.S. senators.
Well, you know, ironically, I did run into him 2 days ago, but
not in Iowa.
I run into him at school. Picking up children is where I run into him. So it wasn't Iowa, but he was fresh back from Iowa, I will say. I think he was a little tired. I will admit that, but clearly he's working it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Aaron, what's the end game here? I mean, there's so many rumors about him thinking about running for president now.
Yeah, look, I mean, in a red wave year in which almost no Democrats won, he won in a very tough state for Democrats to win statewide. I think there's clearly something about his background, his military service, and frankly, how he's carried himself and how he's articulated things. He's been a leader, frankly, in kind of articulating a different vision for the Democratic Party in terms of the border and other things like that. And there's great food at the Iowa State Fair. So it's a great combination of things. It's really interesting to see this whole kind of pattern develop. We have kind of two different senators right now. You know, Senator Kelly tends to be more of a heads down guy, kind of getting things done. I think Senator Gallego likes to be out front, and we're kind of seeing that happen as things roll out.
But can I point this out? Because this is sort of a weird time. You could possibly have both our senators running for president. Mark Kelly was certainly on the short list for
VP. Yeah.
You know, there is a scenario where I don't think it's very likely.
I suspect they will work it out one way or another.
But it could.
Well, but here's the question, because you have a Democratic Party that sort of the conventional wisdom is maybe a little leaderless at the moment. Aaron, I'm not sure if you would agree with that assessment.
But for sure.
I mean, it seems as though, and maybe I'm just going out on a limb here, it seems as though Senator Gallego, even if he's not ultimately going to decide to run for president, maybe he's kind of running to be sort of a voice, a face of the Democratic Party.
Look, Arizona is a great spot for a Democratic leader to emerge, because to get elected statewide here, you have to win over kind of the independents and even some of the Republicans that decide our elections. It's a, you know, there's a little bit of, like, you know, Bill Clinton, the Democratic governor of Arkansas, Someone needs to emerge to articulate a new vision for the Democratic Party. Senator Obama did that, and you know, everyone is rendering their clothes, saying the Democratic Party is going to cease to exist. Do you remember when Obama got elected, and everyone thought there was a new coalition forming, and Republicans would never win another national election? That wasn't that long ago. Politics tends to swing from one thing to another, and I think there's a good chance that Senator Gallego could be a part of what's articulating a vision for Democrats that really gets back to it's about working people getting great jobs and being able to support their family. That's what we should care about, and we kind of lost our way a little bit.
Marcus, does Senator Gallego, car pickup line at school aside, does he have what it takes to be sort of a national voice for Democrats?
Oh, I totally think so. I think he's already proven it, frankly. But, you know, you're watching him articulate that message in Iowa. You're watching him articulate it on the Hill. He certainly got the energy for it. He is a hard worker and a mover. And by the way, also a dad to young kids. Not an easy spot to be in. But he's up for the challenge. There's no doubt about it.
With the caveat that none of the three of us in this room are lawyers, I believe. You guys aren't lawyers, right?
English major.
Okay. So we're talking a little bit about jurisdiction, which is one of the most fun things to talk about on radio. There's a dispute this week between the Pinal County Attorney Brad Miller and Attorney General Chris Mays. County Attorney Miller has offered to investigate Democratic State Senator Annalise Ortiz over concerns that maybe she did something she shouldn't have done when she was posting on social media about the location of ICE agents. Attorney General Chris Mays is saying, "Yeah, it's not really your lane. Let's keep to what we're doing." Is this like what's going on here, Marcus? You think
it's called political theater?
What is that?
It was politically, it was a smart move by the Pinal County Attorney, and we're talking about him. His name's in the newspaper. The story keeps going. He looks like he's tough on Democrats, but. I think everybody knew this wasn't going anywhere, number one. Number two is, having had more than a couple discussions over this, I mean, it seems to me that it falls clearly in freedom of speech, clearly protected in the U.S. Constitution. So this is a real weird space to sort of be in. Am I to be investigated or arrested if I'm on the phone with my wife and I pass, two police cars and say, "Oh, I just passed two police cars at 24th and Camelback"? Is that now a violation? So, anyway, all that to be said, it was nice theater.
I think this is, item number 4,520 in the just sad low moments of the Trump administration, because we have normalized the idea that you attack your political enemies and try to use the mechanisms of the state and lawfare, whatever you want to call it, to go after them. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, it stems from this, I will be your retribution and all the stuff that the US DOJ has gotten involved with, which is just a really heartbreaking low moment for our history. But it rolls downhill, as they say, and that you now see kind of local politicians on the Republican side trying to make their name by saying that they're going to try to attack. We can have political differences. We should debate those and talk about them. But let's keep them in the arena of politics and not go after people like this.
I would only add that it's not just Republicans. It's on the Democrat side as well. Annalise Ortiz certainly loves the microphone and loves the camera. So there's part of theater
her,
there.
I don't
it's on her. Both sides, because there is a massive growth in narcissism and people running for
office. Let me ask, because Marcus, you said it's political theater, but like it's not outside the realm of possibility, according to Senate President Warren Peterson, that the legislature hires County Attorney Miller to actually do this investigation.
Yeah, he certainly could. I mean, that's within his purview. I just at the end of the day, I'm not too sure how that comes to, other than creating more political theater. I don't think it ends up in a courtroom.
And that's the sad point, that this is what you do now to try to get ahead in politics. The good news is, in Arizona, for all our listeners out there, you may not know, we have these slap laws that basically say you can't sue someone just to try to stop their freedom of speech. And this would be, I think, an open and shut slap case. We had some wise legislators probably decades ago that put this thing in place, and there's something to kind of prevent something like this from happening here in Arizona. But it's just one of those ones that kind of makes you shake your head and feel a little bit sadder about our politics.
So, Aaron, yesterday, the Arizona Corporation Commission, the utility regulators, among other things that they do, took a vote to start the process of basically repealing Arizona's renewable energy standards. This is something that's been in place for many, many years. The commissioners are saying, look, a lot of utilities are already exceeding the standards, so what's the point? But a lot of environmental advocates and renewable energy advocates are saying, well, if there are no standards, what's the incentive to do it? I think I know where you stand, but I'm curious to get your take.
Look, I mean, the good news is the market has kind of spoken here, and I think APS is about 54% renewables right now. That same argument is like, well, why would you mess with reducing the standards if everybody's above it anyways? The Corporation Commission is so misunderstood and not even followed by most people in Arizona, and it really makes a huge difference, particularly in our regulated utilities and what they do. It was, you know, definitely not a great moment to see APS really walking back a lot of their clean energy pledges. This seems to stem from, you know, I don't even like to say the word big, beautiful bill in talking about that piece of legislation, but it's like if you were trying to figure out how you could screw up the progress we were making on renewables and global warming, you do those things. This is another stretch of those. We now have five Republicans. There's not a bipartisan Corporation Commission at all. It's a tough race for Democrats to win because it's so down ballot. But it really, really matters in terms of just having a voice for the people. I mean, I grew up in Arizona. It's a heck of a lot hotter here than it was when I was a kid. And something's going on. We got to start getting involved to make it better.
Marcus, is there something to the argument that if the utilities are already doing this, why do we need to mandate that they do it?
Yeah, I think there is something to that argument, and a little bit more to Aaron's point. I mean, the market seems to sort of taken over. And I think that's everybody's good with that. That's what we want. And, you know, there's no shortage of Teslas on the road. I can tell you that right now. So clearly the technology is starting to work and starting to pay for itself. And so the question is then, you know, the market's always a stronger force than a regulation, I think. It's paying off. And so there's generally not a need for that additional regulation.
Do you foresee that the use of renewable energy, of clean energy, will continue to grow in Arizona, or might it take a step back if these standards go away?
I don't think it will take a step backward. I think if it financially works and it pencils out, it will be good for business and it will be good for the environment and it will work. If it doesn't, it won't work. It just doesn't pencil out.
Where do you think?
Look, it's a little bit like kind of reading the national mood. You know what I mean? When everything was moving in that other direction, APS had committed to eliminating all coal-fired power plants by 2030. They've backed off of that now, kind of taking the direction, I think, more from the federal government. This specific regulation, because most of the utilities are so far past it, probably won't matter that much, but it all sets a signal in terms of where are we going. I think our first job is to try to preserve this great state for our kids and our grandkids. And this is definitely not helpful towards that.
Let me ask you about something else. We talked about Attorney General Chris Mayes just a minute ago. She issued an opinion just earlier this week about Prop 308, which was the narrowly approved voter initiative that provides for in-state tuition for Dreamers, the member people who are DACA recipients, deferred action for childhood arrivals. Aaron, was this this probably wasn't surprising. I mean, we know that Attorney General Mays supports this, but in response to some threats from the federal government to sue states that give benefits to people who are not here legally, does this put people's minds at ease, do you think?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it was a really tortured ruling that somebody who went to high school in Arizona could move out of state and then come back and qualify for in-state tuition was kind of the how she threaded the needle on this. This is one of those items that Arizonans broadly support. We know because it passed with the majority of voters when it went to the legislation. I personally know a lot of these Dreamers. Arizona and the United States is the only home they've ever known. You know what I mean? That's just the reality of it. To deny them in-state tuition just seems kind of cruel to me. And I hope this puts this issue to bed and we can all get to our better selves here and let these kids who grew up here as Arizonans, many of whom just want to contribute to making our state an even better place, get that in-state tuition.
Marcus, I'm going to assume, just based on what we've seen, that the DOJ is not necessarily going to be scared off if they want to sue by an opinion from the attorney general. But do you think these words from Attorney General Mays, like, do you think it matters in terms of what the future of in-state tuition for this population might be?
I agree with you. DOJ is certainly not going to be scared off and certainly not scared off by Arizona AG Mays. But isn't that to her advantage? I mean, she's clearly, I mean, how many lawsuits does she have with this Trump administration?
A couple dozen at this point.
I mean, it's an everyday occurrence. So
can I just say one thing about that? These things are hugely significant. Like AmeriCorps, which I spent a lot of my life supporting, National Service, The last Supreme Court ruling basically said only the states that have sued to stop the dismantling of AmeriCorps is where the program will continue. Arizona is one of those 22 states right now. So it's hugely important when Attorney General Mays is getting Arizona on the list of people who are fighting it, which preserves some of these programs. We'll see if this is that same opportunity. Sorry to interrupt you, Marcus.
I've lost my thought now. So anyway, I think it's to her advantage, but I'm also a little nervous for Republicans on when you are going against a voter-approved measure, what kind of signal that sends to the the party faithful. And so that's we're in a little bit of a iffy ground there.
Interesting. All right, guys, we'll have to leave it there. Marcus Delartino, Aaron Lieberman, thanks you both for the conversation. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.